It's spring, and we've come to Kalmykia, southern Russia, one of the few places in the country where wild tulips like these grow, with some even believing that they're the souls of dead Kalmyk warriors. So let's get stuck in. Chichirdik in Kalmyk means shaking, if I'm not mistaken, and you can certainly see why, because the dance itself is very energetic. What are these movements supposed to mean?
The movements in this dance imitate galloping horses. The Kalmyk people used to spend their entire lives outdoors, surrounded by nature, constantly moving from place to place and observing everything around them. They noticed how the larks moved in the sky, sort of dancing with their wings fluttering. This observation of the lark's dance, combined with the observation of how beautiful the steppe is at dawn, and the imitation of galloping horses, came together to form the Chichirdik dance.
And is that why there's so much stamping on the ground as well? That's the horse's hooves?
Yes, it's the horse's hooves, and you can see that in the movements. There is imitation of both calm and fast riding. This motion, combined with what they saw in the sky, became the traditional Kalmyk dance that we call Chichirdik.
As I've already said, the Kalmyk dancing certainly seems to be very lively, especially considering the calmness of the steppe that we're in now. This seems to be one of the features of Kalmyk dancing. What others are there?
Our people were very energetic and always on the move. Nature had taught them to move together, always advancing forward. This movement, this drive to keep going, is probably what gave birth to such a dance.
Now, I see the girls here, they're wearing these fantastic red dresses, and the way they flutter and flow in the wind almost reminds me of the tulips in this meadow now waving in the breeze. Is that purely coincidental?
As a dancer, I've seen various costumes in my life, sometimes yellow, sometimes other colors. But then I had an idea. Seeing our red tulips, I decided to make women's costumes the same color. The men's costumes remained traditional black. Now this color combination is widespread across our republic and even beyond.
Well, it's certainly a very striking combination. Why is the tulip such an important symbol for Kalmykia?
Every spring we see these tulips, not just red, but yellow, blue, and many other colors. Our people, as I mentioned, were once nomadic. They lived in tents, moved constantly, lived in unison with nature, and took inspiration from what nature provided.
Oh, Hungar, that was mesmerizing. Thank you. Peter, nice to meet you. Nice to meet you. Nice to meet you. Now, we're here in the vast steppe. And I can imagine that back in the day, without modern technology, it would be easy to get turned around. But I believe that your ancestors somehow used throat singing to help find their bearings. How did that work?
We have a legend that says we didn't navigate in a traditional sense, as we use songs to measure distance. Some use kilometers, but our people would ask, how far is it to Yesentuki, the city of nine flags? And the answer would be three songs. A single song was a unit of measurement. It could last 3 or 4 hours. So when they said three songs, everyone understood how far that was. How many songs to Moscow? 9 songs. It's okay, we can manage that.
So it was a form of entertainment?
One form of entertainment.
And is that why nomads were considered to be some of the best singers, because they had a lot of practice?
Of course, the steppe inspired our people. When you're in the mountains or in a forest, everything is so much taller, more vast than a human. But in the Kalmyk steppes, you realize nothing stands higher than you except the horizon. And so here, people's souls wanted to sing. The steppe embodied wisdom. It would get covered with silver feather grass all over. People simply contemplated, philosophized, and sang songs about nature.
Some Kalmyks believed that throat singing used to have certain healing properties. How would that work? Did you just listen to it?
Throat singing creates a vibration that is believed to calm the nervous system. Today, monks in our Buddhist temples chant mantras using throat singing, inducing a trance-like state. Listeners may drift into their childhood memories. When elderly people hear it, they reconnect with their youth, returning to reality enriched with positive emotions. When children from special needs schools, for example those with Down syndrome, hear our throat singers, they start to bloom like tulips unfolding. For this reason, these sacred sounds have been considered to have healing powers since ancient times.
So it's a form of meditation and stress relief.
Through meditation and reconnecting with nature, people find enrichment.
And is throat singing inspired by nature? Is it meant to emulate a specific animal?
Some claim that people got the idea of throat singing by listening to the wind. But only one animal is capable of making throat sounds. It's the saygar antelope. Modern saygar antelopes have been around since the times of the mammoths. But the mammoths became extinct, while the saygar antelopes survived. We're the only region in Russia where this ancient antelope roams. They protect their young from predators by making loud throat sounds. Saygar calves also mimic their adults. And this is the origin of throat singing.
So it was a type of warning that animals would use.
Those saygars seem fragile. The loud throat sounds they make can be heard tens of kilometers away and induce predators into stress. Predators become confused between what they see and hear. Our warriors later weaponized these sounds, blending throat bleating sounds into battle cries. And this is where the Russian battle cry, "Ура! Урала! Ура!" came from.
Yeah, and I've even got goosebumps now. У меня даже мурашки после этого. Saygar is a local antelope and a very unique species. Several decades ago, their very existence was under threat, but locals rallied and now they're carefully guarded in the Chornye Zemli Nature Reserve. They're fast sprinters. Let's hope we can catch up with them. Sergei, the saygar antelope, they once lived among woolly mammoths, woolly rhinos. How did they survive where the others didn't?
It's true that saygar antelopes are as ancient as mammoths and woolly rhinos. They have been able to adapt to the arid steppe climate. You might have noticed their unusual noses resembling short trunks. They filter dust while antelopes travel at high speeds.
Well, talking about dust, the steppe, it seems to be a very arid place. There aren't many sources of water here. How do they get the water that they need to survive?
Kalmykia is an arid land with few water sources. In the wild, water accumulates only after rain or as dew on grass and in lush grass. That is enough for saigars. They need very little water.
So they get enough water from the grass?
Yes, they get sufficient moisture from grass. Even when there are wells somewhere, our water is saline, it's salty and bitter.
Okay.
So eating grass is best.
Really? Is that saigar in the distance there? Can we see them there?
Yes, these are saigars.
Now, they're a very timid species of antelope, and I've seen them dashing across the steppe. They're extremely fast. What sort of speeds can they reach?
Saigars are very skittish and cautious animals, capable of reaching speeds up to 80 kilometers per hour when threatened.
80 kilometers an hour?
Yes, even over rough terrain.
Okay, well, we need to go a bit faster then to catch up with them.
We'll approach them now. They haven't been startled yet.
So, saigar antelope, they have a very short lifespan, on average around 4 years or so, with many of them dying during the mating season. Do they really go at each other that hard?
During the rutting season, males separate from the main herd to form harems, anywhere from 5 to 50 females for mating. To claim and protect these harems, males engage in fierce battles, which can lead to serious injuries and even death.
Oh, sorry to interrupt, you can see quite a few to the right there.
There are a lot of them, yes. The male's bodies become exhausted. In the wild, a weakened saigar may fall prey to wolves, so drained that it can't flee.
Really?
Yes, it can't even save itself.
I believe they were also hunted as well. What impact did that have on the population?
From the late 1990s up to 2014, the saigar population dropped to a critical low, around 3,500 of them. As for 2024, after the latest population count, their numbers have rebounded to 40,000.
That's great. And there are hundreds running in front of the vehicle now. What a sight that is. God, and they're kicking the dust up in the air as well. That is stunning.
A great shot there.
Wow, you know, I'm sorry, but I'm going to have to take a picture of that for myself as well. That is amazing. And the main predators here, I guess, are wolves, eagles.
The saigar has only one natural predator here, the steppe wolf.
Ah, okay. But I guess because the steppe is so flat, they can see them from a long way away.
They tend to graze in open plains with flat pastures, so they can see and hear danger approaching.
Well, Sergei, thank you very much. That was certainly an unforgettable sight, seeing the saigar run straight in front of our vehicle. Thank you.
You're welcome.
The Kalmyk steppe is the hottest place in the whole of Russia. But in the midst of this barren landscape, life and true wonders can still be found. Is it true that the desert is expanding constantly? And if so, why is that?
In recent years, rainfall has been plentiful. Tumbleweeds have spread their seeds, helping to stabilize the sand. These conditions enrich Kalmykia, as its deserts are home to rare amphibians and reptiles. Even rare birds arrive, species that can't survive in the steppes, only in desert and semi-desert zones.
So millions of years ago, this would have been an ancient ocean. Can you still find traces of that ancient ocean here to this day?
When we take guests out into the sand dunes, this being the lowest point in Russia, we can show them clear evidence that this used to be the seabed. You can see mollusk shells, and in some places in Kalmykia, we extract the finest building material, shell limestone. These are essentially compressed mollusk shells, proof that millions of years ago, this entire area was once part of a vast ancient sea, the Paleo-Caspian Sea, which united the modern-day Caspian, Black, and Azov seas into one body of water. Today, those seas are separate. But here in Kalmykia, we can still see glimpses of those ancient waters.
Amazing. Now, this is considered to be one of the hottest places in Russia. So if we were here in the summer, and it was midday, the sun was at its peak, what sort of temperatures can be reached here?
Kalmykia is now the hottest region in Russia. Right here in the desert, temperatures in the shade can reach up to 57 degrees centigrade. But thanks to the dry climate and constant winds, we tolerate the heat relatively easily.
It's probably not good for pale ginger people like me.
The sun is dangerous. You have to protect yourself. Wide-brimmed hats and sun cream are a must. Without them, you risk sunburn or even heat stroke. But for us Kalmyks, used to a sharply continental climate, both the intense summer heat and the harsh winter cold are manageable.
Well, you're very lucky then. Well, thank you for telling me all about the desert and the steppe here. I know there are more natural treasures to be found. Shall we go and see them?
Yes, let's go.
Moving deeper into the steppe, we find ourselves confronted by an otherworldly landscape, a salty lake with a vibrant pink hue. Hangar, I've heard there's a beautiful legend about this lake. Can you share it with us, please?
According to legend, these salt lakes are actually from our ancient warriors. After defending southern Russia in battle, commanders would order their soldiers into the salt lakes. Deep wounds from swords, spears, and arrows would close quickly in the saline water. Blood would flow into the lakes, tinting them red, and the healing process was said to happen almost instantly.
That's quite the legend. What's the scientific reason for such a color?
Science tells us the pink hue comes primarily from halobacteria, followed by red algae and Artemia salina, a tiny brine shrimp. When temperatures exceed 25 degrees centigrade, these salt lakes begin bubbling with microbial activity.
The mud in this lake is renowned for its healing properties. What ailments can it help with? And I've also heard that the mud has a very specific smell.
Our lakes are rich in pink salt, but the real treasure lies beneath. There's black therapeutic mud with an oily texture hidden under the pink crust. We compare it to the Dead Sea, but our mud is far more beneficial for your health, as it's saturated with macro and micro elements. We can treat wounds with this mud. While many cultures warn against getting dirt into wounds, we do the opposite here. We apply this mud to speed up healing. The skin becomes velvety smooth, and the healing process is almost instantaneous. Magic.
But I've also heard that you shouldn't take a mud bath for too long here because it could irritate your skin. What's the optimum amount of time you should bathe in the muds here? And what happens if you stay too long?
Scientists caution against prolonged exposure in these salt lakes. Mud treatments shouldn't exceed 15 minutes to avoid potential burns.
Really? Okay, well, everything in moderation then. So, not only in
moderation is the key.
Camels have always been present in the life of Kalmyk nomads. Strong and resilient, they would transport yurts across the vast steppe and serve as reliable companions.
Is it true that these very camels have travelled the length of the Silk Road? What makes them so well adapted to travelling such long distances?
You're right. These very camels walked the whole length of the famous Silk Road. The wife of the renowned explorer Fyodor Konyakhov discovered our project, visited our Kalmyk steppes, and was so enchanted that she later returned with the camel caravan. And she's the one who gave us these magnificent Bactrian camels you see here.
Amazing. And what makes them so well adapted to traveling such long distances?
Notice their two humps. These fat reservoirs can actually metabolize into water, allowing them to travel vast distances.
Now, these camels, they seem pretty chilled and lethargic. No offense, but am I right in believing that these camels are actually racing camels? What sort of speeds can they reach?
Don't let their lumbering appearance fool you. A camel can reach a speed of 40 kilometers per hour and is hard to stop. Why? Unlike a horse's gallop, camels run in an ambling gait. It's an absolutely breathtaking sight.
I can imagine. I can really imagine. Now, I've heard a funny comparison that if you compare riding a horse with a camel, the camel is like a Lexus. Is that true?
In terms of comfort, camels are better than horses. Meet Belchik. He's our Mercedes business class camel. See how high humps provide perfect back support? He seems to like you. Riding him feels unbelievably smooth. It's like gliding in a Lexus.
Do you think they'll let us ride them?
Okay, let's have a ride.
Brilliant.
Grab the hump. Swing your leg over. There.
Oh, just split my trousers.
All set?
Yes. Well, yeah.
Don't be afraid. Take a deep breath. And try to relax.
Oh, so a Lexus definitely starts a lot
now
more
tell
smoothly.
Me, does this compare to a Lexus or not?
It's certainly very comfortable, but a Lexus certainly gets going a bit more smoothly. Are there any actions I should refrain from doing to avoid scaring or making the camel angry? I do realise I probably should have asked that question first.
Avoid loud noises or sudden movements. The camel might perceive it as a negative reaction. Camels are highly sensitive animals. They mirror your energy.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm in a very good mood now. I hope that he can feel it.
So how does it feel?
I mean, my heart's still racing, but what a beautiful experience on a camel in the sunset in Kalmyk here. I can't complain. Of course, camels are famous for spitting. Why do they do this? Is it because they're scared, because they're angry, or something else?
These giants fear nothing. And yes, they are known for spitting. They do it when annoyed or angry. It's their way of expressing negative emotions. If they do, fair warning, that smell might survive two or even three laundry cycles.
Well, I'll have to make sure not to get any camel spit on me today, then.
Stop now. Stop.
Kalmyk cavalry took part in the Napoleonic War, and they even reached as far as Paris. Are there any legends surrounding Kalmyk camels from those times? And are they as fierce as they made out to be?
During the 1812 war, the Kalmyk cavalry joined the Russian troops. They arrived not on horses, but camels. We told the enemy right away, surrender now or face Kalmyks on two-humped horses. And you know, the Kalmyks came up with another clever tactic. They smeared their camels' muzzles with blood before battle. Imagine seeing these ambling beasts with bloodied heads for the first time.
Uh-huh. And throat singing as well. Wow.
By the way, I learned something new about them last year. While they normally graze on grass and camel thorns, and they like bread a lot too, it turns out our camels absolutely adore ice cream cones.
Well, as long as he's happy, I'm happy.